Martin, I've got a Eurovision fact for you.
Hit me with a fact, please.
Did you know, obviously, we know Eurovision is normally held every year in May. The earliest Eurovision date, though, was in 1957, the second year of the contest. It was held, actually, in the 3rd of March. The latest was in 1999, when it was held on the 29th of May. So normally, it's always held in May. But that might be about to change.
That might be about to change. Interesting times ahead. Welcome to Nullpoint. Yeah, it's just a really weird situation and world that we are living in at the moment. I've never known anything like this. It's just completely bonkers.
It's completely mad. And obviously something like Eurovision possibly being moved isn't as important as some of the other things that are going on at the moment. Considering what's happening day by day, it seems to be changing. But that is something that's being discussed because obviously we're talking about the coronavirus here and the possibility that it might not happen this May.
Absolutely. And various different countries around Europe have been told different things. Some have it more severely, of course. Italy is having real troubles. Spain having lots of problems as well. But different countries have imposed different rules. Here in the UK, the advice that we're being given by the scientists and by the Prime Minister is that they are expecting a peak of this disease to be in about 10 to 14 weeks, which would of course take in that period around the Eurovision Song Contest. It looks like in the Netherlands as well, similar sort of advice is being given, and they have similar rates of infection as well. So I would guess that they would be looking to impose the most strict rules at the exact point at which the Eurovision Song Contest would have been, or at the moment still is, taking place. A hugely changing picture. If you're listening to this podcast a few weeks after we put it out, the situation may be completely different. But for now, as we're recording, let's bring you up to date with what we actually know, because there's been a statement from the EBU.
There has, and they've said, you know, as a lot of big events are saying, they're closely monitoring the situation at the moment and the spread. They're working with the Dutch host broadcasters and the city of Rotterdam. They're looking at different scenarios for the Eurovision Song Contest this year. But they say, crucially, with 2 months to go until the three live shows and a rapidly changing situation, it's still too early to make any final decisions. So they're saying, we're continuing to work together as a team on preparations to host the 65th Eurovision Song Contest in Rotterdam. This is something they released on the 13th of March, which was a day before we're now recording this. You know, I don't know what else they can really say at the moment. I feel like a lot of events are in this same situation. They can only say we're closely monitoring it. It's a big deal to have to cancel an event of this caliber and size, you know, with really not very long to go. So it's a big decision, but obviously they have to make the right one because it's people's health. It's the world's health on the line. So I think that's all they can really say at the moment. It's interesting. Rotterdam's mayor has also come out to say he wants a decision by April the 6th, which is the date that organisers plan to start building the stage inside Rotterdam Ahoy. Whether that will be the case, whether they will make a decision by then, I don't know, because that's still, you know, over a month to go until the contest is due to take place. Who knows what will be happening by the beginning of April, which seems like a crazy thing to say.
I know. As far as I see it, I think there are probably, for the organisers, four options.
Sure.
Number one is cancel it completely and just have it in 2021, yeah, in May, and almost forget that this year ever happened. That's one.
Which would be a shame.
Which would be a huge shame. Number two, postpone it. And do you put it back to like October, that sort of time? That's possible. Number three is it takes place as planned but without an audience. And number four is that it takes place but in a completely different format, you don't have all the performers performing on one stage. Instead, you're basically just showing video clips of performances that have already been done, and then something like that. Almost do it virtually, if you like, so yes, that people aren't congregating. So those are the four options that I can see. I mean, there might be other ones, but those are the ones that I can see if they have to do something. And I'm thinking that they probably will, as things are looking like at the moment. If you were the EBU, which one of those four would you pick?
Oh, Martin, you've put me in the hot seat. I'll be honest, it would be probably between not doing it this year and postponing it. The difficulty, obviously, I think the difficulty with the other two, you know, it taking place but without an audience, or not having, you know, having recorded performances instead, is there will still be a large number of people that will come to Rotterdam in that week, because there'll be the press, there'll be, you know, there'll still be enough people coming to there because of Eurovision being on, I think. So if I was them, I would, you know, just move the entire thing either to next year. And I don't know if that would mean, would the contestants that are due to perform this year just perform a year later? Yeah. I would assume so. Yeah, because it would be very unfair if they never got to, you know, take part at all. Or postpone it, as you say. They are in discussions about maybe postponing it to the autumn. Again, the problem is we don't know what will be happening then either. You know, will the summer mean it, you know, it slowly dies out? We just don't know. So it's another risk they have to take if they decide to move it, and then once again, you know, it's still there, or it comes back. So I don't know. It's a very tough decision to make. Probably one of those two. What about yourself, Martin? What do you think?
I would go with postpone. I would say postpone until about October, maybe November time. The thing is, if they did decide to have it taking place without an audience, or in this kind of virtual way with competitors sending in videos, that would still work. It wouldn't be the Eurovision Song Contest we know and love, but ultimately the Eurovision Song Contest is a television program. It isn't actually, for the majority of people who are involved in it, the 150 million that watch it, it is not an event that people go to. There are actually very few people, in terms of sort of percentage of people involved with it, actually go. So really, would the TV show still happen? Would the Eurovision Song Contest happen? Yes, it would, as far as people are watching at home are concerned. It's just a shame for people like me and you that do make a thing of going to it every single year. So I think they could still do it in May, with maybe, but completely changing the way they did it. That seems a shame. It would certainly lose a lot of the atmosphere that you get from having that live audience and having everybody perform on the night, and having it live, of course, which is a big part of it. So I think personally the best idea would be to postpone it, or to sort of, I suppose, postpone it for 12 months. So have it next May rather than this coming May. Those, I think, would be my preferred options.
And the question, of course, is, Martin, do we still buy tickets for the semi-final? Because we haven't got them so far, by my failure, as has been mentioned
yes,
a fair bit already. So I'm not going to go into that again. But yeah, do we? They're coming out at the end of March. Should we still go for them? What do you think?
It's really, really difficult, isn't it? And if this was last week when we were talking, I would have said, yeah, absolutely buy them. Not a problem. There's still ages to go between now and then. Things have really changed in the however many days it's been, 7 days since you and I last talked about this. The situation is so, so different. I think the likelihood of this competition going ahead in the way it's always gone ahead, with no changes, is now very, very minimal, which makes me think that there's probably more than a 50% chance that we won't be going.
Yeah.
So should we bother buying the tickets?
I am almost going to be surprised if they even offer them up for sale, to be honest, by that time. I would be a little bit annoyed, quite frankly, if they think that it's fine to include a third wave, given just that, you know, it's still about 2 weeks, I think, until they go on sale. So by then, they should surely have a clear idea. I mean, the mayor's asking for a decision a couple of days after. So I would hope that they would think it not right to, you know, suddenly be offering tickets to something that's looking like you say. But who, maybe by then there'll be a clearer picture, and it, you know, they will be able to say actually this is going ahead. Who knows? But I, at the moment, I'm kind of thinking maybe we did the right thing by not by being rubbish and not getting them.
We've accidentally, I think, made a really good decision there, which is very unlike us.
Yeah, I meant to do it all along. It was all meant.
You knew all about it. I wonder that they will maybe delay when they put the third wave
I'd
on sale till after that decision at the beginning of April. That would be sensible, right? Because if you've got to make a big decision about doing it, why on earth get people to buy tickets for it only to then have to presumably refund them?
Yes, exactly.
They've got to refund them, right? They can't just go, well, thanks for spending all the money. You're not coming, but thanks for the money, all the same.
Yeah, well, as you say, refund it, or maybe give the rather than refund it outright, say, well, actually, we're going to move it to this date and your tickets will be accepted on that date instead. And then maybe if you're not able to make that date, there's nothing they can do. But, you know, I think that's what a lot of other events are doing, saying, well, actually, we're going to have it on this date, we'll move it to then. But yeah, so I would say maybe we did the right thing, just haphazardly so.
Yeah, quite possibly. Anyway, look, this episode was not meant to be about this.
No.
But obviously we've got to talk about it because it's what is on everybody's mind at the moment. What we wanted to do today was, because as far as we are still aware, really, and as far as everything says, this is still happening, it's still going on, and all of the songs have been released. So now we present to you here at Nullpoix our songs to watch for Eurovision 2020.
Yes, and when Martin says songs to watch, these aren't just the songs, you know, we think are going to do well, but they're also, well, they're just songs either because of how good they are or how bad that we think you should look out for. Because there's always a mix in Eurovision. There's always the ones that are pretty average, you know, not terrible, not great. But these are the ones we think, you know, if you're at a Eurovision party, they're the ones you should turn the volume up for and definitely keep an eye out for. So the first one we've got, which normally makes some lists every year for Eurovision, is Sweden's entry, which is by a group called the Mamas, and it's called Move.
Yeah, I really like this one. It's anthemic, it's positive, it's upbeat, and it's sort of quite different for Sweden, I think.
I'd agree there. Yeah, it's quite soulful. It's three women, and they're quite melodic. And it's, as you say, it is different for Sweden because Sweden often tends to send more kind of poppy type songs, a bit more. Whereas this is still modern, but like a lot more soulful in its arrangement, but still very catchy. And those mamas can move. They move about that stage. They have a good old dance. And it's one that, you know, it's upbeat. It's fun. I think we'll do well again for Sweden. They can never go wrong, old Sweden, with Eurovision. And I think they've done it again with that one.
And do you think that a lot of the reason that they do so well every year, because they always do, they always come out with a cracker. They might not always win, but they're always up there with a really good song. Do you think that's to do with the way that they choose the person that's going to represent them?
I do. They put a lot of effort into it. Melfest, as it's called. This year, I mean, there's 12 entrants for it, and it gets whittled down in, and that's just in the finale, you know. So there's a lot of people, and people take it seriously as well, and it's seen, you know, it's a huge event. There's semi-finals, so it's a big deal for Sweden every year. It's seen as its own kind of thing, its own concert, whereas in the UK, I mean, obviously we didn't do that this year, but it's been, you know, 1 hour and a half of programming, and no one's really interested in it. I don't know, there's just a different view of Eurovision and the selection process in Sweden. So yeah, I think that does help.
And I think if you replicate the sort of the voting process, the real Eurovision voting process in your own country, you're more likely to get a song that's going to do well in the voting process in the real Eurovision, because it's going on working on similar terms. I think that's a sensible move.
That's a good point. And they've also, for many years, done something which has done very well in terms of putting that song, that winning song, out there in social media, out there in on YouTube, out there on like Spotify streaming services, and getting it out there so that people have heard of it before, you know, it arrives in the final. So people, it's charting, and you know, I don't know how Move has done in terms of that, but I know in the past that's what they've done, and other countries are now catching on to that system. But Sweden's been doing it for so long, you know, they're just professionals at all of this, really, in how it works.
They're very, very good. Let's move on to something that maybe isn't quite as yes, not quite as good. I'm talking about Armenia's entry.
Yeah.
Now we've chosen this not because we think it's going to win or come anywhere close, just because it is one to watch, because my word, it might not be good, but it's certainly catchy. It's called Chains On You.
Chains on you. That's not anywhere near the... Yeah,
do you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of... I whip my hair back and forth. I whip my hair back and forth.
Right. Okay.
And that was in my head months.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's the sort of old let's throw a bit of rap in there, which you always get in Eurovision as well. There's always a bit of, hey, we're edgy, we're cool. Yeah, and it is one that sticks out, though. You can't deny it.
No, you can't. Thank you to old Athena Manukian, who's providing the rapping there on that. I'm almost scared to admit this, but I kind of like it.
Yeah.
I know I shouldn't, and I know that it's... I know it's bad, but it's one of those that it's so bad that it's good.
Yeah,
and I'm okay with that.
I would say that stands for a lot of songs in Eurovision, and that's fine.
Sure, that's basically 50% of Eurovision, isn't it?
Yeah.
So bad it's good.
So the next one on our list is actually, at the time of speaking, the odds-on favourite to win. It's gone past others that were in that spot. So it's won by Victoria, who's representing Bulgaria, and the song is Tears Getting Sober.
Now, it is a good song, and
yes,
I do like it. It's nice. I'm surprised it's the bookmaker's favourite, have to say. Don't quite get that, but all right, fine. There's nothing wrong with the song. Really nice, really good, nice performance. What do you reckon?
I agree. Very nice song. Musicality, really lovely. I'm not sure what she's going to do staging wise, what will happen there. It is a lovely song. I think it ends quite abruptly. I do wonder if it's something, you know, why this might be the odds favourite. This is just a theory, but, you know, obviously Bulgaria, they were looking to enter last year's contest, but they couldn't because of financial difficulties. So they've been out for a year. Is this perhaps people, you know, it's a strong song in itself, but then people, you know, being happy that they're returning, so sort of welcoming them back, you know, they've come back with a strong opener, and maybe the fact they've been away for a little while is helping them. I don't know if what you think about that theory, if it seems a bit of an odd one. It is a good song as well, though, don't get me wrong. I feel like amongst some of the others, it doesn't really grab me as much.
No.
She's got a very lovely voice.
Yeah, this is it. I can't say anything bad about it because there isn't anything bad to say. It's just it doesn't stand out in the way that I would assume that the bookmaker's favourite would. I don't know. I'm not sure about all that, them coming back after a year, that sort of stuff. I don't know. I don't think people, to be honest, and this sounds bad, but I'm not sure people would even have known that they'd
no.
been away.
No,
I don't think people think like that.
No, I don't think they do. But what I'm thinking is, at the moment, the reactions that, you know, bookies will be getting will be mainly from Eurovision fans, people who are because, you know, other people aren't paying attention to the Eurovision that much at the moment, you know. Sorry to break it to you. I mean, obviously, you guys are that's listening, and thank you for doing
yes.
so. But unfortunately, you know, the wider world probably, maybe there's some other things going on at the moment.
Really?
But I mean, that, you know, the reaction and I don't pretend to know anything about bookies, but, you know, they'll be getting are from, you know, media outlets, are from, you know, people in the know who might maybe be more interested in Bulgaria returning. That was my only thought. But it is a good song. I think maybe it could be up there with something like Rise Like a Phoenix if the staging is done well, you know, because that again was a good song on its own, but what it came into its own with Conchita and that, you know, so who knows, maybe if there's something special done alongside the song, which is a strong one, it could do very well.
I still remember being in the arena for Rise Like a Phoenix at the semi-finals and seeing it for the first time, and genuinely I think it's one of the only times it's happened I got like the hairs on the back of my neck stood on end. It was such a moment, and at that point you just thought, that's it, that's the winner, that's going to happen. But it was something about it being there in the stadium in front of those big crowds that made that happen. Yes. Interesting we talk about that and also talk about the possibility of there not being a crowd, whether that would actually change who the winner could be. Let me tell you about San Marino. And the reason I wanted, or we wanted to mention San Marino, is just because I think, well, we're describing this, Chris, as our kind of our wild card entry. It's by someone called Senhit, and it's called Freaky.
Oh, San Marino, you've got to love him, haven't you? Yeah. Whether this will even make it to the final, who knows? But I mean, for me, Eurovision is, you know, San Marino is Eurovision. Without San Marino doing the odd little disco thing from years ago, it feels like they still haven't really come up to date with what's going on in the Eurovision, and they never will, I don't think, but they just get a lot, and they just have a good old time. You know, we had Serhat last year with Say Na Na Na. Senhit, this isn't the first time she's represented San Marino either. She represented it in 2011 with Stand By, which was a much more kind of, no, not somber, but a bit more chilled out song. But Freaky is a bit of a kind of disco orgy.
Is it a bit freaky?
Yeah, it is a little bit freaky. Senhit likes it freaky, apparently.
Okay.
Yes. And, you know, again, it's got some fantastic lyrics, you know, put on a show, cuckoo completely. Some people think our love is freaky.
Okay. Yeah.
And, you know, you can't say more than that.
Well, I wish they would, in a way, but no, you can't. You can't say more than that. Okay, we're getting into the last two because we've come up with six songs to watch out for here.
Yeah.
And these are our last two. One of them we think is going to be the winner, and we'll do that in a second. But now one that almost certainly won't win, but you've got to see it.
I don't know, Martin. I think it could do pretty well, especially on the televote, because people will just be like, what on earth is this? It's Russia, of course. It was the last one to be announced, and boy, did they go out with a bang in the selection. This is Uno by Little Big.
I made a note when I was listening to this the first time round, and all I wrote was this: it's absolutely hilarious.
And it is. Now, Little Big, not strangers to creating this kind of wave. They've done viral songs before, Skibbity, which apparently got about 23 million views on YouTube, and they had another one called I'm Okay, which went global on TikTok. So they're used to causing...
They're not okay.
They're not. Well, I think... that song goes, I'm okay, I'm not an alcoholic, and then just features them like drinking alcohol quite a lot. And this one, again, you've got to watch the video because it's got this rather rotund man in a tracksuit, like breakdancing. I think he's going to be part of the staging, which will be excellent. And it's, as we heard there, it reminds me a bit of, do you ever remember the I use the term band loosely, but the cartoons.
Yeah.
That did like a song about Ato, the Witch Doctor. It's that kind of gimmicky sort of song, which they've obviously had a lot of success out of. And they've just taken that to Eurovision. It's not something I ever expected from Russia, because previously, in the past few years, they've done quite, not serious, but anthemic songs, you know, quite nothing of this oddness.
Yeah. I remember they had the same woman the last few years, actually, who
yes.
had an incredible voice, came up with these brilliant ballads, and everybody kind of felt something whenever she sang, and oh, it really kind of, it meant something, right? And now this.
They're like, oh, well, let's just send these guys over. Yeah, and she got booed, I remember, sadly. We were in the audience, and obviously the...
Yeah, she did. Yeah.
Things were going on there, but you know, they call themselves a punk pop rave band, whatever that means, and they're just obviously there but for a bit of fun, and I kind of like that. I think if you switched it on and you'd never seen Eurovision before and you saw them, you'd be like, okay, you know, this is what people told me Eurovision was like, and I don't think you'd be surprised. I think this is what people think of when they see Eurovision, like a man with a big handlebar moustache doing a weird dance.
Yeah. And for that reason, I think it won't win. I think that's why it won't actually do that well. It's really funny. It's great to watch. It's great to laugh at. It won't win. I just think we've gone past that now. We want something with a little bit of credibility.
Perhaps. I think you're right, because everyone, most of the other acts have got a bit of credibility. I think it'll do well because it'll get the, you know, it'll get the memorable vote. People will be like, oh yeah, that one, that was quite weird. Oh, I might give that a few points. I don't, and Russia, you know, does tend to do well with some countries, more than others. So yes, I think that there will be an element of that, but I agree. I don't think it's going to win, but who knows if their staging is even more ridiculous, and it depends where they get put. They could certainly do well.
Finally then, and this is the final song to watch out for at Eurovision this year, we've got to talk, of course we have, about Iceland.
Baby, I can't wait to know. What do you think about things? Believe it, I will always be there, so you can tell me anything and I'll listen.
We've mentioned them before. It's, of course, Dardi with Think About Things, which we both enjoyed when it came out. And I think this is a good all-rounder. You know, it has got a bit of the gimmick of Uno and Little Big. But it's also, actually, the song is a bit more enjoyable.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's a song, if it came on the radio, I feel like with Uno and Little Big, it's fun to watch it. But if it came on the radio, I'd be a bit like, oh, this song is actually it's a little bit irritating, purposefully so, I'd say. But Dardi is like something I could listen to and I'd enjoy listening to. Whether I do wonder if their sort of rise was too early, whether they've peaked a little bit, because as we said, Bulgaria seems to have moved up now. But on the night, obviously, there'll be a lot of people that have never heard the song before and I think will enjoy its weirdness. It's got the dance moves. It's got, you know, the sort of jumpers with the faces on them. It's got a bit of gimmick, but it's also a good song. And I think that is a good recipe for success in Eurovision.
Definitely. And you're right about the whole peaking early thing. Although, to be honest, I think that's going to end up being a moot point, really, with the current situation. I think, you know, we're going to completely forget about
it all a moot point, Martin?
Well, yes. Yeah,
this whole episode.
Yes, it is. Yeah. I don't know why we're even bothering, to be honest. Yeah.
Right.
That's it.
I'm going.
Forget it.
See ya.
We're off. The Iceland one, I think, is the only song out of all of them that I can sing back to you without having to go and listen to it again. Like, it's catchy. I remember it. Baby.
Oh.
I've been there so long. I don't think about things.
Oh, he's dancing. He's doing the dance as well, everybody.
Of course I am.
Thanks for that. Well, you were sort of there, yeah?
It's something to do in self-isolation, isn't it? Learn the dance for yes. thinking about things. Right, well, there we go. There are our six to look out for in Eurovision 2020. Sweden, Armenia, Bulgaria, San Marino, Russia, and Iceland.
Right, so there we go then. And obviously, if you do want to tell us your selection, who you think we should be looking out for, tell us, you know, should we still go for these semi-final tickets? And your thoughts just in general about what's going on at the moment with Eurovision and this kind of unprecedented situation we're all in. Do let us know. We're on Twitter. We're on at Poinul, P-O-I-N-T-S-N-U-L. Tweet us there. We've also got a Gmail if you want to email us nullpoirpodcast@gmail.com. We're on Instagram now.
Everywhere.
We're just everywhere. We are dominating the social media waves. Okay. No, we are. We are. By presence, if not by popularity. Instagram as well, Nullpoir Podcast. Join us on there. And we've made friends, obviously, with Douzpoir, the podcast.
Yeah, we should say hello to Douzpoir. Already better than
G'day.
Us in name alone. before we even started doing anything. But no, it was really nice. We had a really nice message off them, and which we talked about last week. And so thank you very much. And we are in conversation with Douzpoir. And the idea is that at some point we're going to do a little collaboration. Nullpoir meets Douzpoir, and they add together to still make Douzpoir.
Yes. Well done there.
There we go.
See.
Thank you for your company over the last little while, and we will see you again next time, perhaps from quarantine.
Yeah.
Who knows?
A self-isolation episode.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
A self-isolation special.
Nothing will have changed. We'll see you then.
Bye-bye.
Bye.